Welcome back to Dunk Auto Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan. Today.
Today is a big day.
Yeah.
We have finished book two of the Kingkiller Chronicles, Wise Man's Fear.
We're two-thirds of the way through, Luke. There's only one more book to go.
That's right, and it's coming soon, I'm assuming.
Potentially. We'll get to that at the end of the pod.
We'll get that to the end. But so, okay, today, because I think it's going to be a long, we have a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to do our notes on this section, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about the book as a whole at the end. So no warm-up today.
No.
So
we're getting right into it. So Luke, we're back at school.
In this section. You mean like sword school though?
I guess we go back to school twice in this section.
Right. I'm assuming you're not jumping to the end.
No, we're at sword school. And if I'm remembering correctly, we left Quoth about to get his ass beat, potentially.
You mean in the previous episode?
In the previous episode.
I kind of forget exactly where we left off, but it was early.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we left Quoth where he was like just meeting his teacher. She beat him up a little bit. And then she gave her And then he gave her the big stick and said, go for it. Go to town, lady. There's a problem that I have with this school. I mean, there's a few, but the main one is that I don't think that they realize or choose to accept that Quoth is just like lying to them in kind of a weird way. So he does his little tree thing. I'm going to jump ahead to sort of the end when he actually gets let into the school.
Okay.
He does his little tree thing. And the thing he brings back is like his blood, and they interpret that as that he's willing to bleed for the school.
Right.
Quoth doesn't really care about this school that much, does he?
Right. I mean, I feel like that scene especially, people kind of know that he's putting on a show.
Right. But if they know he's putting on a show, like why even, if everybody knows that this is all a show, then it doesn't work because you're just like, yeah, there's nothing you could do to convince us.
Since we're talking about this, I have a very similar note on this specific scene.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we are jumping into the middle a little bit, but so this it's a test.
Yes. Yes.
And you have to go through the sword tree. Did they call it the sword tree?
Yeah.
The blade tree or something?
Yeah.
You have to navigate through it, and it's really dangerous because the leaves are really sharp and such, and it moves in the wind.
Yep.
And there's a bunch of items at the base of the tree, and you pick one and bring it back out, still avoiding. And it's like, the big thing is not only does your performance of like navigating through the sword tree, like not only is that part of the test, but also they say what you bring back like
matters,
is very informative.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Correct.
As you've pointed out. And also, frankly, as Quoth says, actually.
Yeah.
Because Quoth is kind of like, all of these can be interpreted in like completely different ways.
Yep. Yep.
And so like, this is just not a good way of getting someone's character from them.
Yeah.
But to your specific point, like everybody knows that we're just doing this as like a formality and he's going to leave and like not be a mercenary.
Right.
So like, what do you mean he's willing to bleed for the school?
Also, he has loyalties to so many other things before the school that he's been at for like 2 months.
Right. He's so clearly just a tourist at this school.
Yeah. So like, why are we buying any of this? Why does this show work? Now, I do think that there is one component of the show that works because it's really for Tempe. So the head of the school, Shiyani, I can't remember her name, but it's something like Shiyani.
Uh-huh.
If Quoth doesn't prove himself, then Tempe gets in big trouble.
Yeah.
So there is a world in which they're like expecting him to just put on a good enough show that they don't actually believe it, but they're like, as long as you put on a good enough show and the other teachers kind of buy it, then we can go along. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think this is right. A lot of this is just like they're in this weird scenario.
Yeah.
Where Quoth has been taught things that he shouldn't be. And so like really that requires punishment for like him and Tempe.
Yeah.
And they're kind of just, this whole thing just feels like a way to get around that.
Right, but it's weird. It feels really weird because their response to it is like, all right, well, let's teach you more stuff you're really not supposed to know about.
Right.
Because, like, he's not going to, he doesn't take these, like, oaths to the school that seriously.
Right.
Which,
he's only there for 2 months.
Yeah. And they give him like a famous sword, like an old famous sword, and expect him to bring it back. And I mean, if I'm Quoth in this moment, I'm like, there's literally nothing I can do. I don't deserve to be let into this school.
Right.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's a weird, like, it's a weird solution that they've found to this problem. Because I do think, and tell me if you disagree, that most of this comes about just because they're like in that weird situation of Quoth being taught a little bit of it.
Yes. I think this is true. But I think also that like it seems strange how much they're willing to like do for him for no reason.
Yeah.
I guess because like Tempe's kind of cool, but they also like dunk on Tempe all the time. They're like, he's not that good. He's pretty dumb. He's quick to anger. Maybe they just made a mistake and you have to fix the mistake. Feels much more like what they should have done given what ends up happening.
Right. Like it feels like it should have been just like, oh, Tempe shouldn't have taught this. And so you have to promise not to teach it. And also like Tempe's going to be punished in some way.
Yeah.
But not like that. Not, he's not going to be like killed, right?
No, no. Granted, he's going to be exiled, which he sounds pretty bad for him. But
just don't do that. You know what I mean? Like what they have done hasn't really solved. It's clearly a technicality in everyone's eyes.
Definitely. And I think what's also upsetting about it is that when he leaves, they sort of make this sly comment like, if you should tell people that you were trained by us so that if you beat people up, they'll be like, oh, they're really powerful warriors. And if you don't, they'll be like, oh, he only knows a fraction of their skills.
Right.
There's a third option that's like a bunch of weeaboos being like, I gotta go learn from the sensei. And they're showing up at your door being like, teach me your ways.
Right. That's the most likely option.
I would say. They're like, oh, you're taking recruits now. I'd love to join.
Yeah.
And they're annoying. They are going to be very annoying.
Yeah.
They're not the coolest boy ever. These are just random dudes who are obsessed with your culture. They're not gonna be cool or smart.
Right.
They're gonna wanna ask you about anime. That's all.
They're gonna be super into anime. I also wanna say this thing that like it's can only be good for them of either people will be really impressed by how good Quoth is, mm-hmm. or people are saying, oh, he only learned a little bit.
Yeah.
Like that's not the only two. Like, if he's bad at if he's not that good at fighting, people are going to be like, oh, they kind of suck at teaching.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. I kind of have a lot to say about the Adeem.
Yeah, let's stay with them. I have a lot about them as well.
Their culture is like very different, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
In ways that I find a little bit interesting, because it's kind of a mix of like the noble savage idea in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like live really simply. They like don't have the same taboos that we have, I feel like, is kind of common.
Mostly sexually.
Right.
which is really convenient for Quoth, but anyway.
But then like also they have other traits that we think of as the more like advanced and structured societies, like like their excessive cleaning of themselves.
Yeah.
And then like their expressions thing is actually more of a restrictive thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because they mention how the kids will like smile and stuff.
Yeah. So they have to train and themselves not to do it. Yeah.
Right. Right. So I don't know if the like the mix here is really coming through in what I'm trying to say, but like it does feel like two different ways of viewing one of these types of cultures coming together.
I mean, it's
in one.
It's just samurai Japan. Right. Like Patrick just read a lot about samurai Japan and was like, oh yeah, that's where he goes.
Except for the sex thing. Right. I don't know a lot about samurai Japan, Dan.
I think now this is my understanding of this comes exclusively from the TV show Shogun, but it seems like they're very like a lot cooler about sex than Western. Okay. And like part of the deal in the show is that this Western like Englishman shows up and he's like appalled at their sex stuff because they're you know, they have a lot of like prostitution and stuff and it's not like as much but that's of kind a taboo. Of...
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
The Adeem take it to a whole another level, I will say.
Yeah, which is something that we need to talk in more detail about though.
Okay, let's do it.
Because a part of this noble savage thing, Luke, is the fact that they don't know how babies are made, presumably.
Yeah.
Now, on the one hand, I'm like, how can they not know? This feels like it's really obvious and easy to figure out, considering, like, I don't know, there's like animal, like, Quoth makes all these analogies, gets called out for it because it's not a proper analogy, but it's also kind of is a proper analogy, but... what is her name? Kenthi, I think, or Penthi.
The girl that's like not his teacher, but yes. Who kind of sleeps with.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. She makes this point that she's like, well, if men are the cause of children, why don't I have a million children? Because I have sex all the time. Right. And I'm kind of like, yeah, that is actually a good point.
I know.
Like, why isn't everyone pregnant all the time?
Right.
And I don't have a good answer to that, and I feel like it's deserving of more attention. I feel like Quoth should be like, actually, yeah, that is a good point. Why are there, like, a normal amount of kids running around?
Right. It is a good point. I don't know. I can't tell if it's just, like, Patrick is kind of tired of this argument and wants to move on with the scene, or if it's like opening the door for them being correct.
Right. Well, he also partly explains a question I've had this whole time after Quoth has been having sex with seemingly everyone, which is like, he has a bunch of kids running around now.
Right.
Which we'll get to a little bit later, but like, Patrick chooses to make this a point. This is completely unnecessary for him to bring
right,
up.
Right, so he has, like, some form of birth control that he, like, chews some herb or something. Right?
Yes, yes. And Patrick decides to say, hey, these people don't believe that men, they don't know how reproduction works.
Yeah.
I guess just to make it seem like they don't have everything figured out. But they're not
stupid.
Yeah,
I'm not really sure what the point of it is.
Right. Like, they interact with
other
cultures.
Well, the other thing, right. And this also kind of, like, comes into play with, they have, I mean, for one thing, they, I don't know if it's explicitly matriarchal, but they have somewhat of a matriarchal society.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything explicit in this, or is it just because most of the people that we've been interacting with in leadership positions are women, and that's like a circumstantial thing?
I mean, I think that's part of it. I think their philosophy sort of lends itself to being matriarchal because the women tend to have a bigger role in just life and nature than they think men do. Right.
Right. Okay. So my next point was, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to get from the, like, the Adim have this idea, basically, that I think Pinthi says, which is that, like, all men have to offer the world is their anger.
Yes.
Is, like, what I think I'm paraphrasing that.
But, yes.
And it's like, okay, you guys don't think that men are necessary, and all they have to offer the world is their anger. So, like, I feel like that leads to some negative philosophies that I'm surprised that you're not following.
Yeah. Like some nice little pens to keep the men in, you mean?
Right.
And I think it's also interesting how they talk about the men not necessarily being better fighters just because they're bigger.
Yeah.
And how, like, a lot of the women, and in this, like, in this school, the women are kind of the better fighters.
Yeah.
I guess, like, okay, to bring it back to their sort of general vibe, you know, it's just not of the Lathani, Luke.
Right.
So, wouldn't be of the Lathani to put the men in cages.
That's true. So true. I don't know. Their whole thing is strange to me.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of culture, Luke, but, you know, that's just what it is. It's kind of weird, and that's what's cool about it. And now Quoth has some of that. Makes him a little cool and weird.
Now Quoth's got some of that.
Yep.
Another thing, they view, so being a mercenary is like the highest social status position.
Yeah.
And Quoth kind of talks to them about this.
Yep.
And he's like, just doesn't really seem particularly, like, I don't know what word he uses or if he even talks about it like this, but it's like, that's not really like a super noble thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Because he thinks about it as, like, they're kind of like sellswords. They're just like,
yeah,
fighting for whoever will pay them, at least from his perspective.
Right. And his teacher is like, oh no, that's stupid because, like, we protect people and blah, blah, blah. And, like, I'm sorry, but no.
Yeah, correct.
This is like a fairly, this is kind of like a, Quoth is right.
Yeah, I think Quoth is right. And I think it does make them feel a lot better about the fact that they get to have this really nice school and not really do agriculture as much because they have a bunch of mercenaries out there that are paying the bills.
Right.
But, like, these people talk about who they are serving, and it's not like they're serving people who are in desperate need of, like, protection from evil. They're like, one guy was talking about, he was like, there was a rebellion in this landlord's fiefdom, and he had to protect the landlord as he walked around his, like, little fief. Is that of the Lathani? I don't know if that's of the Lathani. Make him hire some goons or whatever.
Right. It's just like, you can't make me think that being a mercenary is, like, super noble. You just can't do it.
Yeah. Especially if you're making money. Especially if you're charging three times the amount that an average mercenary is. You're not doing charity work.
Right. I feel like Quoth doesn't really do this because I think understandably so. He's kind of, you know, on his own there, and he's like kind of in a vulnerable position.
Yeah.
But like they just don't, they'd be wrecked by someone who comes in and is like arguing with them.
Yep. Destroyed. Absolutely destroyed.
They're like, oh, you don't have this word in your language. I forget what example this was, but there's one where she's like, you don't have this word in your language, but it means this thing. And it's like, ah.
I think she's, is that the one where she's talking about anger? The anger of men?
That's one, but I'm thinking of a different one. Yeah. I should have written it down, but I don't have it.
That's all right. There's one more little thing in here that I do want to talk about, where the Chandrian, we're given some information about the Chandrian.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts by this backstory about there used to be an empire with seven cities. And then six of them became traitors, but one didn't.
Right.
And they're talking about like the Chandrian formed from the like leaders of those six cities who turned traitor, along with a seventh who like convinced them to turn.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of implies that these are the bad guys here.
Yes, I think it definitely implies that.
I mean, what's this empire like that they are rebelling against is what I want to know.
Oh, good point. Okay. We don't,
like,
yeah.
You called it an empire. Oh, not great connotation for me on that one. So like,
right.
Like how bad are these guys? You know?
Right. We need to know the details.
Right. Like, who are they fighting against? Why did they turn quote unquote traitor?
Right.
I might call them liberators maybe, or like rebels, freedom fighters maybe. I don't know. What? Give me more context, okay?
Sure. Dan, being a traitor is always bad.
Empire, good. Consolidated power, good.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense coming from the bunch of cell swords.
Right. I also want to say about this, a big theme of this book is the like unreliability of stories.
Yeah.
And how they can often be like completely wrong. Well,
I don't know if we've seen evidence of a story being wrong, of quote, or somebody telling a story and then being like, oh, actually, I was wrong for believing that story too much because it had a lot of things wrong with it.
Right. Well, but like quote, for example, is always talking about how he makes stories up about himself and how like stories about him have become ridiculous.
Right. But in the same breath, he's only telling like most of the stories he tells. He's like, oh, but this one I can tell is real.
Right. Yeah. This is the point I'm trying to get to where it's like, I mean, this kind of harkens back to our previous episode when he's criticizing Dinah's song. And he's like, listen, I heard this story that contradicts all of your research.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, well, I mean, are you corroborating these stories in some way? Like, I don't know. How much are we taking from this story by the Adim about this historical event?
Mm-hmm.
It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, I mean, I guess it's all he has to go on, really.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, it adds some mystery, Luke, okay? We can't have it all solved. We still got another book.
Sorry, we still got another book. One thing I kind of appreciate about this section.
Yeah.
And so he's at the school for about 2 months. I think there's some ridiculousness in like how many resources they contribute towards training him. And also how like the best girl in the school is really into him and stuff like that. Like, yes, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I will say, I think he did a slightly better job than I was expecting and making himself not too good at fighting.
Yeah, I agree.
I think there is a little bit of restraint on his part by not being like, and then I was the best fighter of all time.
And then I made it to third stone and we had a front fight, and afterwards it ended up with us naked. Don't worry about it.
So yeah. I'm proud of Quoth.
Right. I agree. The fact that he didn't beat any of them was correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he leaves.
Yep.
After he leaves, there is a moment that Patrick tells us why Quoth isn't out there planting a bunch of seeds when he's having sex all of a sudden.
Okay.
He's suddenly on birth control. Did you notice
this? Happens earlier, right?
This happens, oh yeah, that's right. This happens when they're having their baby discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
What? He says he chews this every day.
Yeah.
Bro, like, you're a madman. What world do you live in that you're like, literally any day I could be having sex, so I gotta be ready for it 24/7? And I do understand that it sounds like you have to chew this every day for it to be potent, for it to like work when you want it to.
Yeah,
but like, my G, like,
how much, like, there's a lot of details in here, because it's like, is this something that you can just kind of collect anywhere, find on the side? Like, is this an easy thing to find? Are you like buying it?
Yeah. And when did you start? When were you like, okay, it's time to start chewing? Because I'm ready. I'm ready now. I know all the moves, so let's make it happen.
Right.
Like, has he been chewing this since before he went to the Fey Realm?
It seems like it.
That's
the way that he... The way that he talks about it makes it seem like he's been chewing it for like years.
Can you imagine this like 14-year-old kid being like, hang on, I gotta get my sex herbs so I can't make a baby. And they're like, dude, are you having sex? He's like, no, women terrify me, but I gotta be ready.
How carefully do you think he's managing dose?
Oh, not very. He's like doing a dip with this stuff.
Right.
And he feels like the kind of like terminally online Redditor to be like, you're right. I think he's been doing this for years for no reason. Like, he just, it makes him feel cool that he could at any point have sex and he's ready for it. And yet he like explicitly tenses up when any woman sort of like has any affection for him. Like, when he's at the bar and the, you know, serving woman is kind of coming on to him, he's like, I don't...
Well, he used to, yeah.
Sure, but he was on the pill at that point.
Right.
Oh, buddy. You still have to ask. It's still a very important question. When did he start? What instigated him being like, well, time to chew?
Yeah.
Oh man. Anyway, just like a wild little detail that is useful for me as a reader, but needs I needed more about it.
Right. yeah. It's kind of a funny thing for Patrick to throw out there.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I gotta fill this hole in this story. Obviously, I need to make it so the Quoth has a ton of sex, but I need to have to find a way to fill the hole.
Same with Quoth.
In two ways, am I right?
Yep. Bam. Got him.
Okay. So that's a branch that we've closed off. Yep. There's a big scene here.
Yeah. Can I tell you, this is going to sound weird, but I was actually kind of disappointed in the scene.
Okay.
At how it ended up. This is going to sound strange.
Sure.
The scene you're talking about is where he rescues the two girls, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm kind of disappointed with how it ended. Because, Luke, I thought this was going to be an amazing moment where Patrick undermines this perception that Quoth has about all Ademaru being amazing, good people who are only kind.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, nice. He found some like evil sex trafficking Ademaru. This is going to be really interesting.
Yes. I kind of agree with you. I think it still can be read to some degree like that.
I think
but there is a
less.
Bit of a missed opportunity here.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, I was just like a little disappointed. I was just like, God, I wish they had just been bad ones. Like,
right.
And then Quoth
has possible.
To, yeah. And then Quoth has to reckon with his like sort of childish, like belief in these people. And then he gets to wrestle with the like the issue that was brought up that made him flee from where he came from, and he gets like the sort of like racism from the mayor's wife. If he like then encounters some Ademaru that are like, ah, you guys are actually the evil ones who are like potentially, you know, the source of some of this. There was such an interesting moment at first. And then it was like, oh no, they're bandits. They're just generic bandits who killed the Ademaru that were here. Man. And they're not even good at hiding it.
I agree with you. I think there's still more of that than maybe you're giving credit for, though. Because I think it still lends itself to an interesting discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. This is true.
I agree that it kind of takes away the chance for Quoth to have this.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be like, to be clear, we're not trying to say like, oh, obviously this terrible stereotype about the Ademaru has some grain of truth.
Right.
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 We're trying to say like the Ademaru are people.
Yes.
And so there must be bad ones.
Correct.
Whereas Quoth has this idea that they're perfect, right?
Yeah.
Quoth very much does the no true Scotsman argument.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar?
Right. That you like, there's a set of qualifications to be a Scotsman.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, the Scotsman do this thing or like the Scotsman I knew did this thing.
Yeah.
It's bad. And you're like, well, that's no true Scots. Anyway.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But okay, but like, I do think it brings up an interesting discussion of like, where does the like racism, I'll call it, against the Ademaru come from?
Mm-hmm.
Because even, how am I going to say this? Like, this kind of thing might happen somewhat often.
I mean, when you say somewhat often, I actually imagine it doesn't, because they seem to have to get like approval to be going around doing this stuff.
Right.
And I feel like if there was like justification, like if there were, I think part of the problem here is we're trying to justify racism with like a logical, like, oh, it must, you know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine it actually does happen that often, because if it did, I think people are already primed to dislike them, and so they wouldn't like allow them to travel around in their land from town to town doing music.
Right. I mean, okay, I guess there's kind of this like tension where everyone hates the Ademaru.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but some more than others, but yeah.
Yeah, but like generally they're thought of very negatively.
Yeah.
But they are also like, and like the reason is because they're like, people think that they do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they also like go like are allowed, like are people are very welcoming of them coming in and like doing a show.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's like a little bit of odd tension there. Let me do something very, let's talk about something very specific, which I thought was kind of strange.
Yeah.
And maybe opens up the idea that the edema roux that, that these people with were still bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because this group of bandits, and the leader of them at least,
yeah,
like knows their customs because he was with this, he was like a guard for this troop for like 6 months mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yeah.
So Quoth comes in and they do all the things that show that he's like really one of them.
Yeah.
And then they like bring out the girls.
Yeah.
And are like, as an edema roux, you obviously want to rape these girls, right? And that's like weird to me.
Yeah. I think how I interpreted that was, you know, this guard was brought in. It sounds like he was kind of brought into the edema roux group. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the edema roux, like, it's kind of confusing whether they're like a, whether it's like a race of people or like just people that want to be in a troop.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But you can become one.
Yes. But he was only with them for 6 months. So just because he didn't see them do this, like, I imagine a person who would be willing to like kill all these people maybe didn't realize that this is something they don't do. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe if they were given the opportunity, he's like imagining that they would do this thing. But he's just thinking, oh, well, the group I was with just never had the opportunity to do that. So that's why I never saw it with them.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
because I imagine if the Edemaru were going around doing this, like they feel regulated. Like the fact that there is like a paper that they have to get to go around and do this makes it feel to me like they would be less inclined to do stuff that would sort of like be easily traced to them and jeopardize their safety.
Yes.
They feel very vulnerable yes. to me.
Yes. I think that's fair to say. Sure.
So I don't know. I think maybe I'm giving them a lot more credit than you are. We just don't know that much about them, honestly, because I think, have we seen Quoth encounter a single other edema roux group since his parents died?
I kind of forget if there was any in the last book because it's been so long since we actually read it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I can't remember if like just at the beginning if there was one that sort of took him in after his parents died, but I think like
so he did join like a troop, yeah. But I forget if they were actually like edema roux or not.
Right. Right. But definitely not in this book did we encounter a single other edema roux.
Right.
And I think I cannot remember any in the last one.
Right.
So we have no points of comparison aside from what Quoth is telling us.
Yeah.
A lot of questions about the edema roux.
I mean, okay. I think the point that I'm trying to get at though is that like, so the, like, let's keep the idea that the edema roux are very good.
Okay.
And like Quoth is mostly right.
Yeah.
This group like steals their stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then goes on to do the things that people think that mm-hmm. edema roux do.
Yeah.
Because like now they're bad people, right? There yeah. are bad people in the world that want to do these kinds of things, and they have like identified this opportunity that will let them do it.
Yeah.
Like, I just have to think that that's somewhat common.
Yeah.
And so this becomes somewhat of a self-perpetuating
thing. Luke, yes. Yes, I love this. Mm-hmm.
And then this brings me to my next one, which is a big one. They have Quoth has a fight with the mayor and his new wife.
Yeah.
About edema roux.
Yep.
And I forget his wife, the Lackless.
Yeah.
I forget her first name, though. Hates the edema roux with a passion, yep. right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very racist.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that we're given that she specifically hates them is because her sister ran off with a troop.
Yes.
And I think that's probably what happened, that yeah. she was like wanting to and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But like, I do think there should be a little bit of compassion on Quoth's end, where you literally just experienced a group of people kidnapping young women.
Under the auspices of the Adamaru.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually,
people talk about this as like a slut shaming kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is like very normal for like young women that are getting like sexually assaulted or something.
For sure.
And again, I don't want to like perpetuate the stereotype. I mean, it's a book, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just like you just experienced something very similar.
Yeah. That especially considering the fact, Luke, I actually love this as an explanation for what's going on here, because I agree. The Adamaru are both very vulnerable and very visible in the world.
Yeah.
And people tend to trust them. People tend to like allow them into their communities because they're like musical and stuff. And so if Quoth hadn't encountered this troop, I don't think anybody would ever learn the truth that they are not Adamaru.
Right.
So you have to imagine there's a... This might happen a lot where it might not be the Adamaru doing it, because the Adamaru might have to actually be as nice as possible to be able to get in the first place to these communities. But they might just get wiped out a lot and taken over, and people using that trust to like do bad stuff, and people don't know the difference. The normal people aren't gonna know. They're just gonna be, occasionally they're gonna hear a story about an Adamaru troop coming through and like stealing a bunch of women and alcohol, and that's gonna be the story. They need a better PR team, I think, or like a special little, I don't know, like a something to make it obvious that they're a Adamaru, you know?
Yeah, but anything like that can just be faked, right? Like
maybe a face tattoo that nobody would want, like an ugly face tattoo.
Right. But then the thing that Quoth does.
Yeah.
This is another thing where I'm like, this makes me worried about the Adamaru.
Yep.
Where they just like brand them with an open circle. And they're like, okay, you're no longer Adamaru.
Yeah.
It's like, well,
can't do that.
I mean, it's good that you're punishing negative things, but you can't just be like, oh, we're not, like, an Adamaru didn't do this, because this is the No True Scotsman thing again.
Exactly. That's like, exactly what it is. Yeah.
It doesn't really work as a, like, it works as a way to punish the person that did it,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't work as like a public relations thing.
No. No, not at all.
It's a tough problem to solve, I will say, for the Adamaru.
Oh, absolutely. Seems like they need to arm themselves, you know?
Might need to.
Yeah, that's what the Second Amendment's for, Luke. Anyway, there is a moment that I love where Quoth has rescued these two girls and brought them back home, and one of them looks at him and is just like, I fucking hate men. And Quoth looks back at her and winks and says, hashtag not all men.
I know.
Textbook. Got him.
So, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. This whole scene, it's very interesting. I largely agree with you that it would have been slightly more interesting if they had been real Adamaru.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, I think there's still some interesting aspects of it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Okay. Do you have anything in, I forget the name of the town that the mayor is in, but
no.
Okay. So he has this, he gets in that fight and then basically gets sent or goes on his way back to the university.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a bit of an advantage now because the mayor was somewhat generous.
Yeah.
With, like, he has this line of credit that he can use. And he has this like rite of passage or whatever it is.
Yeah.
He comes up with a scheme.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool scheme, I should say.
Yes. I think it's stupid.
Ooh, okay. So this is the scheme we're talking about is the fact that the mayor has given him a basically carte blanche for tuition. And so what Quoth now does is he doesn't care if his tuition is high, and in fact the higher the better.
Right, because he's now he before he did his tuition, basically the deal that he makes with like the bursar's office.
Yeah.
The guy that handles it.
Yep.
Is like, normally my tuition is less than 10 talents. And so I will kind of do poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Such that my tuition will be higher
mm-hmm.
than normal. And the mayor will obviously pay anything. So because I'm kind of throwing my tuition, I will get half of it above 10 talents.
Yeah.
It's unclear to me if the other half goes to the school or goes to this guy.
I think it goes to the guy, but I don't know.
That's my read on it too. But like, oh yeah, let's just immediately start committing fraud. And the guy that I'm going to bring in as my accomplice is a guy I don't know who doesn't like me, who works for the university.
Well, he likes him now, Luke.
Yeah, but the reason that he didn't like him from the beginning is because Quoth was like, okay, so the reason he doesn't like Quoth is kind of dumb, but it's because on Quoth's first semester, the counselor, whatever we call them, gave him a negative tuition. Mm-hmm. So the guy had to take money out of the university's budget and give it to Quoth.
Yes.
Which means that he cares about the university's budget.
Yeah.
And Quoth is like, all right, this guy that doesn't like me, who cares about how much money the university has, I'm going to start doing fraud with him.
Right. But I think, okay, my interpretation of this, Luke, is that it's hard. I guess when I was reading this, I was assuming what they were doing is like adding to the tuition. So they were just saying, oh, your tuition's 50 talents. We're going to add 20 to the top of that and just write down 70. And then I'll give you the 20 that I added on top. And then the other 50 goes to the university. Or maybe they add, I don't know. I was imagining him just putting a bigger number than they said in the ledger.
I don't think so.
That would be so much easier. Why aren't they just doing that?
I know.
Like, why isn't he just saying, like, whatever the number they say up there, just put 100 every semester? And then it's more believable, too, right?
Yeah.
If it's like the tuition is always 100 talents, just put that. He's never going to check.
Well, it's just like, I think it would be one thing if you're like, the mayor's not going to check, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, keep it reasonable, but, like, make my tuition a little bit higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would be one thing if you were doing that with, like, the professors. Or,
yeah.
But he's not doing it with the professors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the professors think that the full tuition that they charge is going to the school.
Yeah.
And what's happening is that 10 talents is going to the school and the rest is going to Quoth and this dude.
Okay. I think that's what's happening. Yeah.
And maybe it's not going to this dude. Maybe it's going.
Yeah. Maybe
this guy's like
sending it to the school. Yeah.
It's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So part of the, this is, you're ready for my theory.
Yeah.
Part of, I think the like introduction to this story is like Quoth's things that he says about himself. One of them is him getting expelled from the university.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, did this happen already and he like got re-admitted or something?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then my thing stands. He's getting expelled because of this fraud scheme.
Yeah.
Because like, okay, listen, think about this. So one of the last scenes that we get is Hemi or whatever, the professor mm-hmm. that hates him, becomes the chancellor.
Yep.
And now has like a huge role in setting his tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sets it at 50 talents. And that means that Quoth gets 20 talents.
Right.
Right.
Quoth's loving it.
And then so, and then Hemi like is, feels really smug about it. And mm-hmm. he's like, there's no way that Quoth's going to be able to pay this. Right.
Yeah.
And then Quoth goes out, goes and balls out with his friends.
Hell yeah. He
does. Immediately afterwards.
Hell yeah.
Right. Like, you're getting caught. I'm sorry.
Well,
but like, everyone sees you.
He, okay.
And then him's like, whoa, that's kind of crazy. Let me go take a look at this. And then it's like, oh, we only got 10 talents from this dude. What's going on?
He does a little audit, you're saying.
Yeah.
He gets the math professor to help him do an audit.
You literally, like, it's so easy to catch yeah. if anyone just looks.
Yeah. 100%.
Just, like, take what you got and stop trying to take more.
Yeah, but he wants to ball out, Luke. This is all, he's got a, he deserves more, okay?
Right.
I will say, right. Luke, he's just come back from a 9-month trip, and some of the stories coming back are that he, like, went to the Fae and had sex with the hottest fairy around. So, like, maybe he has a ton of money now.
Okay.
So, like, I think that, yes, Quoth, before he left, if he did this, something's going on. But he was just, like, working for the richest person in the world. Maybe he's got, like, a new secret bank account or something.
I guess that's fine. But, like, that's... You're still just relying on them not getting suspicious and looking.
Yeah, I'm still auditing this kid, for sure. Mostly because
right,
I hate
still
him.
Look. And if I look, I find it.
Yeah.
And also, like, again, you're relying on this stranger that doesn't like you.
Yeah. Yeah. Luke, can I actually say, I think there's more people that don't like Quoth than we originally thought.
Okay.
So Count Threp, I think is his name, the guy who's trying to get him a patron.
Yeah.
This is going to be a mini theory here. I think he hates Quoth. And he's...
Ooh, interesting.
And he didn't actually want him to ever come back.
Okay.
Because everybody thinks he's dead.
Yeah.
Quoth has been, like, an important fixture of the court of the mayor for months.
Right. The mayor that, like, Count Threep sent him to.
Yeah. That he, like, gets caught. He hears from him.
Yeah.
Count Threep knew he made it to this guy's zone.
This
and he just
point.
Told everybody he was dead.
This is a good point. Because for sure the mayor would send Threep a message and be like, hey, man, thanks. The dude you sent was, like, really good.
Yeah, at least he'd send a note being like, hey, is that guy... Did you send that guy? I want to make sure that this is the guy. This is the guy, right?
Yeah.
And then Threat be like, hey, yeah, that's the guy. You got him. You got him. He's going to follow up.
Yeah.
I think because Quoth is the one telling the story, he just can't see it when people are like... subtly hate him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like these smiles Count Threp is giving him are like, oh yeah, hey, welcome back, buddy. So good to see you. Oh.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you think Threp just hates him independently or if he's like in league with Ambrose or something?
Ooh.
Because he has been trying to get him a patron unsuccessfully for a
so
long time.
Quoth says. Maybe he's coming up to Quoth being like, God, I'm really trying, but I just can't find anybody to take you, bud.
Right.
The greatest lute player we've ever heard. I can't get anybody to even consider you because this like son of a baron is upset with you.
Right.
Oh.
Right. I feel like there's a possibility that it's less Threat Count Threp doesn't like him and more Count Threp doesn't like think about him at all. You know what I mean? And Quoth keeps coming up and was like, hey man, have you found anyone for me? That was like, oh shoot, I was supposed to do that. Not yet.
Still working on it. Still pounding the pavement, you know?
Like, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate you following up. I'll send that email out shortly.
I'll get right on that. Oh man. So yeah, there's a little mini theory for you. Threp definitely knows that he's not dead.
Nice. Just I like it.
Doesn't set
like
the rules it. Out. There is something though in one of the interludes I want to talk about before we continue with the university.
Okay.
So there's an interlude that happens before he gets back to the university where he gets attacked in the inn. And there's a moment where it's like, oh, maybe he's going to be cool and do his fighting. And then he does really bad and gets fucked up.
Yeah.
And then there's another moment where the chronicler is like, hey, you mentioned that sword that you got. And I'm looking at the one behind the bar. Those aren't the same. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Hey, is Coat actually not Quoth?
Ooh.
Is Coat literally telling just a story that he has put together? Like, is this his screenplay that he's like,
I like this theory?
Is Coat really not Quoth?
Interesting. Okay. Let me say this.
Yeah.
There's a scene at the very, very end.
Uh-huh.
Where Coat, it's like the silent, I forget if it's the like silence one.
Yep.
Where he is doing the Tai Chi thing. I forget what it's called.
Sure. And it says he takes a perfect step.
He takes a perfect step. Yes.
So?
And so like, I feel like that is intended to hint that he faked being bad at fighting.
Yeah.
Earlier.
Sure.
But
I guess like I could see the purpose here being that he like doesn't want to like give people hope that he is that person, or he's like trying not to like believe in himself in a major way. And like he knows what Bast is doing and he's like not playing into it. But he like has a moment where he almost does it, right? Like he has this moment where he sort of, everybody thinks he's gonna do it, right?
Right.
And maybe, yeah, maybe it's him trying to show that like he can't do it anymore, and he's like would try but he can't. But I think it's not actually Quoth.
I like that. I like it. That'd be fun.
And it's all vibes. He's just giving Quoth vibes. Meanwhile, the people in the town who know him are like, you're not fucking Quoth, dude.
That'd be great.
Anyway.
I'm on board with that theory.
I guess also to wrap up the other theory that I mentioned last time while we're talking about theories.
Yeah.
Okay, I think Ari's got a little bit of Faye vibe about her, no?
Yeah.
And I think just like the way that she is in the world is like magical in a way that I'm like, okay, now that we know the Fae is a real place and has like creatures that exist in it that are sort of like people, granted we know about Bast, but like Ari feels not human.
Yes, I agree with that. There is, we haven't read it, but there is a short story that's focused on her.
Oh, I've read it, Luke.
Oh, you have?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
And it doesn't like reveal anything here. I'm not giving anything away, but I still think she doesn't feel like human. It feels like there's other stuff going on for her.
Yeah.
It feels like she is magical in the way that the Fae seem to be magical. Like they can sort of play with the world in ways that are not normal for people to do.
Right. Yeah.
Mm.
I like it. This is kind of just a vibes thing though, right?
It's entirely vibes. But the vibes are strong.
The vibes are strong for her being a little fae. Little fae around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
But not in the quote in the sexy Quoth way.
No. No. She didn't learn because hot Quoth sex
is
stuff.
Fae around the edges in a really shows that he's good at the sex.
He's kind of a bad boy now.
Right.
Can we talk about the women though in town not liking him?
Okay. Yes. What? Okay. So he says that he's like started dating a lot.
Yeah, kind of like very casually, it sounds like.
Very casually, but none of them last.
Yeah.
For like vague reasons.
Yeah. And then
I don't know. It seems like women don't really like you once they get to know you.
Well, we get this sort of explanation that he's not very I think who is his friend?
Bella.
Yeah. She says that he's not very deep.
Well,
is that what, or like he would leave them? What's the,
I get the sense that he seems like he's not really interested in a long-term relationship with any of them.
Yeah.
And they kind of get that sense quickly.
Yeah. Which it sounds like that's true.
Yeah.
For him. And I also think it's interesting. So this is the section as well where Denna meets newfound sexy Quoth and is like, oh, I'm not going to be just another notch on your belt, honey. Like,
yeah,
not going to be me. And Quoth is like, what? I don't, what's the new vibe? Why is it weird?
Yeah.
He's got to know why it's weird, right? I get he's been around.
I mean, like a jealousy thing?
That, and just like, I think definitely a jealousy thing, right? And I think there's also a component where he is like demonstrating, he's like just dating a bunch of women and doing all kinds of sex now. I get that you just came back from your trip abroad and they do things differently there, but you do know how like this stuff works back in your culture, right?
Right.
It's
I'm not sure how I feel about the dinner thing.
So
like I get your point that like he is taking this lack of a taboo among the Adeem.
Yeah.
And kind of applying it in a world that does have the taboo.
Yeah.
And that's rubbing people the wrong way.
Yeah.
I see that. I don't think he's doing it like quite to as an extreme degree though.
No.
Because he's not like having sex with everyone, I don't think.
Right. But it's a lot of them.
I guess I don't really love, because I do think that this tension between him and Denna in this big scene
mm-hmm.
is mostly about that.
Yeah.
At least that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a like an additional thing. And I kind of don't like it.
Mm.
Because is it just meant to make Denna be somewhat hypocritical?
Well, maybe, but at the same time, like, we don't really know what Denna's relationship is like with the other men that she's with, right? Like, maybe Denna has a weird thing about sex where she, like, she doesn't have sex with any of these men that she's dating. It's just sort of like a way to get money, and then, you know, she kind of strings him along and lets him go. But she, like, maybe she has, like, a thing about sex where it's, like, as long as she doesn't do that, she feels like she's not, like, giving that part of herself to these people. I'm reading a lot into Denna's character, but what I'm trying to do is trying to be, like, she's not just a hypocrite about this situation. Like, I'm trying to find a place where, because I feel like, yeah, if Denna was, like, doing this with all these men, absurd for her to have a problem with it, which it sounds like she has a problem with it.
Yeah.
And she's also like still kind of flirtatious with Quoth, and like, so maybe it's something she's just like wrestling with. Maybe it's something she's just like feels a way about it and shouldn't, and is like trying to figure out why she feels that way. You know what I mean? Like, maybe she's processing it out loud.
I agree with that. Like, I think that to some degree, like, even if you like putting myself in Dennis' shoes, like, even if I know logically I can't really have this feeling mm-hmm. of jealousy and like blame Quoth for it, like, you still might have it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess earlier in our series, I was like really kind of actually into the exploration of Denna and Quoth's relationship as we discussed. And I don't really love this ending
mm-hmm.
phase of where we're at.
Yeah.
Like it felt like it went shallow here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like that's inevitable with them because they refuse to, like,
talk about it.
Yeah, they keep refusing to talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's sort of part of their dynamic, is that there is this unspoken energy between them. And if somebody speaks it, then it suddenly, you have to address it. Like,
right.
Yeah. Because, like, their big argument was not about this. I feel like as soon as somebody speaks it, they have to address it and their relationship changes forever. As you mentioned in the last episode, like, the worst that can happen is you guys just never, you can't really be friends in the same way.
Right.
And so this is the tension that their whole relationship is built on, is not addressing this energy between them.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it still stays somewhat interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got some minor quibbles, Luke. Do you have any other major things?
I have one more minor one. No, nothing major.
Okay. I want to hit you with some minor quibbles here. First, I'm annoyed that Quoth didn't like chemistry. This is just a, it feels
this
like
is my minor quibble.
It feels like a personal attack. And
well, my note is that his issue with chemistry is having to write down like his experimental procedure and the results.
Yeah. That's chemistry, but
yeah, that's what you gotta do that, man.
The other thing is cooking. You're talking about cooking is the other thing.
Right. I also feel like that's very important in artificing too, but
yeah,
go off, I guess.
Yeah, whatever. You don't I don't like chemistry. I've never heard that before. Get to the back of the line, Quoth.
He's like, I love the vials and pouring one color liquid into another color liquid like they do on TV, but I hated writing it down.
I just want it to be potions class. Where's Snape?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's annoying. The other annoying thing is he's learning about these magical objects that seem to defy physics. And one of the things that Kilvin says about them is, yeah, we're not able to find a lot of uses for these things, so they just kind of sit here. And the two examples that I want to point out of, like, insanity that he's not able to find uses for are something that eats angular momentum.
Yeah.
So many uses for that, I can imagine. and then another that is something that maintains a temperature barely above freezing.
Yeah.
Hi, this is a refrigerator that you don't have to plug in. This revolutionized our world, refrigeration.
Right. Well, and also the ward thing is also very useful, right?
The ward thing sounds amazing.
Yeah.
These are where you need
to be studying.
I feel like
it's more like these things are amazing, but we only have one of them.
Sure. But even one of them needs to be incorporated into some amazing thing in the university. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're not in his desk. Yeah. He's like, oh yeah, the cold thing? Let me take you down to the kitchen where we've installed it to the fridge.
Right.
What? These are so useful.
Yeah, but he can't figure out how they work, Dan.
But also, Luke, these are the things you need to study.
Yeah.
Like, quit studying other stuff. These are the things that break your system down. That's where you come up with new insights. That's where you have a breakthrough. Yeah. It's called science, guys. It's called science.
It's frustrating, though, Dan. They'd have to, like, write stuff down if they studied them.
I forgot they'd have to write stuff down. Ah, damn. Oh, well, better put them in a drawer and never think about them again.
Right. Only when I want to show my favorite student.
Only when my favorite student asks me about a sword that's 2,000 years old and still sharp am I going to tell them about all these other amazing artifacts that we don't use.
Right.
Crazy.
Pretty crazy.
All right. Speaking of those little things, Luke, do we want to get to reviews?
Yeah. I feel like we're going to have a lot to say here.
Yeah. Yeah. This is your second read through, Luke. I'm going to let you go first here. I'm curious what you thought on the second go round.
Okay. I should have done a better job of organizing my thoughts before going into this, but I think, so I read that the first time a while ago, maybe when I was like 21 or something like that. And I do feel like there's a huge difference in reading it as a young person with very little life experience and reading it as someone with, I'm just going to say, more life experience. Because it completely changes, I think, the way that you see Quoth. Because I kind of remember reading it the first time and not thinking things were quite as absurd. Like, there's definitely obviously absurd kind of on their face.
Yeah.
And that's why I know people have come up with the kind of like unreliable narrator theory. And I'm tempted to go down that route because it's kind of the only way that you resolve the tension of like, how are these stories true? But they kind, it just kind of doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
Because they're like too extreme. Like, the unreliable narrative thing just kind of falls apart because they're so unbelievable to someone that has had life experience that it's like, okay, Chronicler would be like, dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's interesting too. I think an unreliable narrator works with the details, right? Like, an unreliable narrator can get away with changing the details of a story.
Yeah.
But he, if he's unreliable, it's like the story that he's making up, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not the details, it's the meat and bones of the story. It's the fact that he, like, went to the Fae realm and had sex with a goddess for, like, a year, and she gave him a magical cloak because he was so cool. And he, like, wooed the mayor's now wife with the power of his song and letters as like a 16-year-old. Like, those aren't details that are unbelievable or like that you might be sort of massaging. That's the story that you're massaging.
Right. Well, like, the whole story is the story of Quoth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, all of the things, and I will say, I do think Patrick, like, I think there's intentional evidence there that he is massaging the story.
Yeah.
Because he even says, like, that he's been, like, making up stories about himself while he's at the university, kind of, to, like, grow his...
Right, but not... But, like, but not it's just this story. Much. Luke, I will say not this story, because as we talked about last time, he makes it very clear... When he's telling Bass and the Chronicler, no, 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 this is my one opportunity to tell the real story.
Right.
So, like,
yeah. If I mean, I think there's something to the idea, and this is what I was getting this kind of last section of Quoth, the real Quoth, just being like an insane narcissist.
Yeah.
Because he he kind of goes around inventing stories about himself in the story, right? Two layers deep here, but and then now in this section, he like goes around to the different bars listening for stories of himself.
Yes.
And so then now it's like, well, did you make up those stories too? And then like, now are you making up this story? Because like, I think it, again, this is where I'm kind of saying that there is evidence for the unreliable narrator. But then at that point, it's like, well, none of this story is true then. Because this is the story of Quoth.
Right. Yeah.
Like, this story, I know that, like, people have kind of gotten into the theories of, like, the big picture theories, kind of in like a Game of Thrones-esque fan theory situation where people are figuring out like what's going on with the Emir and stuff like that. And I haven't done that. I like doing that. I know it's like really fun as a community to do.
Yeah.
I just like this story to me, at least as a somewhat more casual reader, is not really about that.
Yeah.
The story is about Quoth.
Yes.
It's a character driven story.
100%. Yeah.
And so like to throw in the unreliable narrator thing, the only way you can pull it off, because of how insane everything is to make almost everything he says unreliable,
mm-hmm.
which makes the entire story unreliable, which is then it's like, well, then why am I reading this?
Right. There's no possible resolution to this story that's like, oh, cool. I'm really glad that we spent 2,000 pages on a story. Granted, it's all made up, but like it would feel bad as a reader. Like, it would feel bad to get to the end and have the chronicler be like, yeah, okay, that's none of that's real. So like, it's a good story and I will tell it, but we all know that that's fake, right? All right, back to the world. Yeah. Yeah. Luke, Quoth feels modeled to me on the like Catch Me If You Can guy. Are you familiar with the movie with...
Yeah. The Leonardo DiCaprio.
The Leo movie. Tom Hanks film, where it's like a guy whose life is just like going from one fantastical, ridiculous situation to another and constantly sort of.
And they're all schemes.
And they're all right. Schemes, exactly. He reminds me of that kind of a guy. And the amazing thing about that is it came out fairly recently that that guy made up that whole story. Like, it was told as if this guy had actually done all these scams and schemes and he got locked up for it. But it turns out that the story was also one big scam and scheme and he didn't actually do all those amazing, fantastical things. And the people, you know, sort of buying into his story should have probably looked into it a little. And it feels like that with Quoth to the point where, like, as... I mean, this is a fantasy book, right? Amazing things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we should say Patrick Rothfuss did win the David Gemmell Award. So he's, you know, definitely in that universe, the legend universe.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's like larger than life characters for sure. I guess Quoth just feels... I don't want to say too big because, again, it's a fantasy story, but like maybe too slick. Like things are just like, I don't know. He doesn't feel real.
Well, in the way that he's telling the story, what do you mean? Because like, I think we agree, but like,
he doesn't feel real in the way that everything kind of works out for him really well and he's like the smartest guy and like I guess it's just like hard for me to suspend my disbelief a little bit. Like in a weird way it makes it difficult to suspend my disbelief in this fantasy story of this like 16-year-old who does all this stuff.
Right. Like I guess with fantasy and suspending your disbelief, you're usually suspending your disbelief about like the world and how it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas this one, you're kind of required to suspend your disbelief over like how social interactions work.
Right. How like people work, how like adults interact with the world and like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels like. So some people describe Ender's Game as like bully revenge porn.
Yeah.
This feels like a fantasy. This feels like. It started to feel like just some guy writing a fantasy of this coolest guy he could think of.
Yes. I think that's somewhat of a common critique.
And I guess it's not as interesting to me when I'm not the one writing this as me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not putting myself in quote.
Well, I think also he just like doesn't do a great job of it
sure.
to an adult.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Like, I think he does a good job of it to a child. Like, if you're... But like me, I'm just like, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
And I hate that everything works out for him really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think that like the unreliable narrator thing has become so popular, even among myself.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I have to find a way to make this, because like, obviously everybody knows that this guy sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it like doesn't make sense for him to be succeeding like this. The other thing that I will say that kind of is what I is like part of what I mean about like with more life experience, this whole story is more ridiculous, mm-hmm. which is that like, well, let me think how to introduce this. So I was like very good at school, mm-hmm. right? You were very good at school. We were in school together. And then like...
Not to brag.
Right. But there were like people that were, you know, also very good at school.
Yeah.
Right. And then like I would go after school to working somewhere. And like I've changed careers a few times. And... Or not a few times, but like I've changed jobs and careers a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so like I've been the new person a number of times, and every time I'm like amazed at how good people are at their jobs.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And like as someone who's like after a while of doing something, I can get good at it, mm-hmm. right? And so like when I think of grad school, like when I went in, I felt wildly insecure, yeah. because like everyone else was really good at it already. And then like over time, over the 4 to 5 years, like I got better at it. And then so like I was very comfortable in year 5, mm-hmm. and like felt confident about myself. And then I finished grad school and then started working. And in the new place that I'm working, I'm like, you guys are so much better than me at this thing.
Yes.
Even though I was like a big fish in a small pond previously.
Yeah.
And so like this is a long way of saying that like someone with life experience would know that like you can't just be the best at everything immediately.
Yes.
And so it's really frustrating to see Quoth over and over again as a very young boy, like being the best at completely unrelated skills, mm-hmm. and like not seeming like other people are as good. Like, I guess like one of the examples is that he talks about how every song that he writes becomes famous.
Yeah, it's a banger.
And it's like, are there not other songwriters out there?
Yeah.
Like you can't just, I don't know.
Well, but Luki's bad at math.
Okay.
So not good at math. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree.
But again, clearly, that one's a one just to throw in that he can be bad at stuff, because he's obviously not bad at math, because he's really good at like the artificing and stuff like that, which is very reliant on the math.
I think this is really true. And I love what you're saying about life experience being a really important teacher for this kind of a thing, because I think, especially when we were in school, it felt like we had a lot of time and we're sort of naturally inclined to school. And so our like goodness of it, like, I want to say like, by the time we were like in college, we were really good at school, but we didn't necessarily yeah. understand that we were that good at school, partly because we've been doing school for so long and practicing it for so long that we were good at it. Whereas now that I've like left school for a while, like my life, it feels a lot more limited by how much like time I have to do things. And like, mm-hmm. I have to think a lot about like, do I want to get good at this thing? Is it worth like yeah. the time that I know it's going to take to actually get good at this thing? And it doesn't matter that I'm like good at school. It still takes like time and work. And when I start something, I'm always going to be not that good at it, and it's going to take like a long time to get good at it. Like, it's not something that, maybe some things I can pick up quicker than others, right? But like a lot of things, if I'm starting them, I am bad at it, and it doesn't,
yeah,
it's, and so I think that this book sort of plays into the fantasy of somebody who is just out of school and has this idea that they can do anything, has this idea that if they can think it, they just have to spend a couple of months and they can join the Kung Fu school, or like,
right,
they can, you know, learn a new language in a month of practice.
Yeah.
Or they can become a sex god if they find the sex goddess to train with.
Right.
And I think it's just not how the world works.
Well, and not only that they can get good at it, but they can get better at other people other who have people. Been doing it a long time.
Exactly. Exactly, Luke. And I think this comes into a critique that I had at the beginning of this, which is just that, like, everyone else feels like kind of NPCs in the story. And that's and I think as you go out into the real world where you encounter people doing awesome stuff all the time, like, I tend to find myself feeling a lot more intimidated by all the great things other people are doing than, like, oh, I could have done that. I just, you know, didn't have the time to do it. But if I had been given a minute, I could have figured that out and done it better or, you know, equally as good as them. And it's like, it feels like a really immature viewpoint of the world.
Yeah.
Completely agree, Luke. Man. So, do we want to move on to, like, when we think the third book's coming out?
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm going to start, Luke, because I did a little digging.
Okay, this is a question from the Discord from Ahuri, I think, right?
I believe so, yeah. So first, I'm going to give what we know, okay? And what we know is, in 2020, Patrick Rothfuss's editor tweeted, I think, it was a social media post, that she had not received a single word of the third book to review and did not think Patrick Rothfuss has been writing it since 2014. Now, part of why this is important and part of why the editor might know this is the publisher gave him an advance for the third book.
Okay.
So they've paid for this third book already and they have received nothing from him about it. The other thing that's interesting, the only other like real data point about this third book is that Patrick Rothfuss did a live stream, a charity live stream, where he said if they get to $333,000, he would release one chapter of the third book.
Mm-hmm.
They crushed that goal. And that was in, I think, 2024, I think. I don't remember the exact date, but he has yet to release that chapter that he promised everyone. For donating to his charity.
Bold move.
So I think those are the two, like, structural, like, pieces of fact, like, evidence about it, of data.
Yeah.
I think there's a bigger problem here with the third book. And this is going to rely on a little bit of, like, inference here. I think it's going to be almost impossible to write the third book based on what's been set up.
Sure. Just because there's so much to cover?
I think there's so much to cover, and I think it has to be so sad.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing about the third book. Here's what I think, frankly, it has to do to be the conclusion to this story, is it has to bring us to present day Coat in the Inn, and then present day Coat in the Inn has to do something. Like, the movement of this story is building so that present day Coat in the Inn does something. He is, like, reborn. Yes. He comes out of this stupor and we see the, like, brilliance of Quoth again, and it's like, that has to happen. I think if that doesn't happen, it's an extremely sad ending, considering, like, we're hearing about how the world is, like, all falling apart and things are just getting worse and worse. And if Quoth just finishes his story and then is like, well, I'm going to go hang myself now, and dies, that's not it. Right?
Right.
So suddenly this story is huge that has to happen in one book. So at the very least, this is not one book. This is two books. But, Luke,
well, okay, let me say this, though, because I think that you could do, like, this three-book thing is, like, he needs three nights to tell this story to Chronicler, right?
Sure.
And so you could see a world where, like, the third book is him finishing this story, and then, like, the fourth book is whatever happens in current present day.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I think that there's Poe there. But I think that's still two books, right?
Yeah.
So then I think the other challenge here for this third book is Quoth has to get dirty. Quoth has to, like, the shine has to come off Quoth in a major way in this third book.
Mm.
And I don't know if Patrick really wants to do that.
Yeah.
Based on everything that he has portrayed Quoth to be, to bring him down, to like have that fall of this character, I feel like he has fun alluding to it, but he's yet to like really make Quoth do something really bad or like have something.
Well, what do you mean fall? Because like why do you say that he has to do something bad?
Quoth is ready to die.
Right.
That if he's ready to die only because bad stuff happened to him. Bad stuff has been happening to him for years, right?
Yeah.
I think there is a part of Quoth that is ready to die because he feels responsible for whatever has happened. And he feels like he has done something horrifically wrong, to where the only response is not to use his vast power and ability to correct the problem, but that he is such a problem that he must take himself out. Like, that he must remove himself from the situation.
Yeah. I guess I can see that. I can see other ways of doing it, though.
Sure. That's, anyway. So if I'm going to give an estimate, the third book is coming out in a decade when the publisher, maybe the publisher is like suing Patrick Rothfuss and he's got to come out with something, or he gets AI to write it.
Ooh. The AI angle is interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I do think that another book is coming. Like, I know there are a lot of people out there that say that he's just never going to finish it.
Okay.
I think that he will.
Okay.
And I didn't do the digging necessarily, so I'm kind of doing this off vibes, right?
Yeah. We love that.
I do wonder. I'm curious how much self-awareness Patrick has over who he has portrayed Quoth as, over like our critiques of Quoth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, okay. I do wonder if, like, you know, like I was talking about earlier, how there's this idea of the unreliable narrator, but the way it's done so far is just kind of like very difficult to actually pull that off.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's where the sticking point is.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because like I feel like Patrick has to at this point see, like, I can't make this be the truth because it's obviously ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also you can't just be like, do a clever, unreliable narrator, because that also doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he's just like hasn't been able to figure out how to thread that needle yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess that feels strange to me, because I imagine I imagine, like, when you start writing the story, you have a rough idea for how it's gonna go, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, we've talked to authors on this show. It's not like they have everything planned out, but like I imagine you kind of know the shape of the ending when you start the book. You kind of know a little bit about it. And it feels like if that was going to be in there, that would sort of... He keeps dropping hints about what the conclusion is going to be. Like, he kind of knows what it is, right? Like, Patrick is sort of... You know, he's saying it's going to be a sad ending. He's like giving a lot of hints to like the fact that the sword isn't the same sword. And like there's these other groups that are starting to come up. And I feel like you have an outline for just like the general story beats that you're thinking of.
Yeah.
And figuring out how to make the story work at the end feels important to me when you start. Like, if you start the story being like, okay, I'm going to tell this story where Quoth is an unreliable narrator, and then the cool way that I'm going to twist it is this, right? Like, It feels strange to me to write yourself into that kind of a position without an idea that's cool of like why you're doing that, right? Like,
yeah. I see.
Like, why would you do that if you don't have a way of being like, and here's why I was doing all that stuff?
Sure.
And so, like, that to me feels like not quite the sticking point, because, like I said, if you're gonna do that, you know the way out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my point is more like, again, this gets to the life experience thing of like, if he looks back on it and is like, ah, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
How I was planning to do it to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think that maybe is where he's at with it.
I don't know. Again, this is pure speculation. I've like never read anything about Patrick Rothfuss's personal life.
We've only ever read the books.
Or who he is as a person.
Yeah. This is the entirety of what we're speculating. Yeah. I mean, I could also imagine, Luke, like, there is just a time in your life for writing something like this. And maybe Patrick looks at this and is like, I'm not really interested in that anymore. Like, I don't want to write this anymore. It's been so long. I just am not having fun with it. And so I'm done. Like, I don't want to do it. And I mean, there have been those things in my life that I used to do and that I'm just like, yeah, this isn't really for me anymore. And I can't imagine if one of those things had like millions of people that were like, I need to know, you know, what's next. I would be fuck off. I'm done with it. I'm not really that interested anymore. It's just a book.
Yeah. Well, then I wonder if you like give the, like let someone else write it.
Oh, you can't do that though. Cause what if you want to dip your toes back in?
I know.
It's mine. I know. It's mine. Yeah. I mean, I do.
It's hard to say though. I think it's coming though at some point. I don't know time frame. Yeah. I think
you have to give a time frame.
I think not soon.
You have to give a time frame, Luke.
What am I going to say? I'm going to say, I actually, now that you say that, I think the AI actually does come into play here. So I'm going to say less than a decade.
Okay. You're saying because AI will make the writing quicker?
Yes.
Oh no.
Or not necessarily the writing, but like the like figuring out how to tie all the storylines together.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah.
Because I think I know people hate using AI for writing, and that's like a huge cultural flashpoint right now. I do think there's like a organizational use for AI in writing.
Sure.
It's not like transferring the like creative juices over to it that is somewhat ethical. And I think that can genuinely help with a book like this. So I'm going to say, give me 6 years.
6 years. Okay.
I feel like that's optimistic based on the current, based on the timeline, but
put Luke down for 2032.
Yes.
Love it. Okay. I mean, I will also say, I still think that these books are fun books. We've talked a lot of shit.
They have to be fun considering how much we talk about them, right?
I had fun reading this book. I would not consider it like, I think I would have had more fun as a 20-year-old reading this book than I do now.
Yeah.
But it is fun. It's fun to see Quoth do this stuff. It's fun to like follow him on this journey and have him be this like noble, cool hero who's like good at everything and is,
well, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
What would you think? So we know that this book is a very famous, like, read by, I don't know, millions book.
Yeah.
Do you think you would say the same thing if it was like a random, like a, just a, like a small self-published thing? I kind of almost feel like no. I mean, I agree with you that it's been a fun read. And I think the actual writing and everything is still like elite, right?
Yeah.
I do feel like we would approach it differently, at least in this phase of our lives, if we didn't know that it was a wildly popular book.
Maybe slightly, but I mean, we have a great point of comparison because we just read what was that book we just read that was a fan
Whispers of the Storm.
We just read Whispers of the Storm, which is sort of that, right?
Right, yeah.
Now, and I will say Whispers of the Storm was not quite as fun because I think that Patrick has a little bit of special sauce to it. Like, I think Patrick, the, like, prose, again, we talk about prose, but I think he can write really well. And, like, I have fun reading that kind of stuff. And I mentioned at the beginning of when we started reading this, it's fun how Patrick writes. Like, I like how he writes these characters. And the description and the... Just, it feels like he's having fun with the language.
Right.
And so, all that to say, I think there is an ending here that is good. Like, I think he can... I think that that exists.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's out there. I don't think it's impossible to end this story in a way that's better than the previous two books, even. And so I hope for a third book, and I will read it.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't know if Patrick is able to write that book.
Yeah.
Only time will tell. Luke, should we talk?
I'm excited for it.
Speaking of somebody writing another book.
Right. As you all know, this is a themed summer. We always have themed summers. So we're reading.
We're coming for George.
The final books in Unfinished series.
That's right.
Their current final books in Unfinished series. So we're going back to George.
We're coming for George now.
Coming for George. Book 5 in A Song of Ice and Fire. It's time for A Dance with Dragons.
We've made it, Luke. We've made it to the end. It's been years we've been working on this.
We've stretched this out pretty well.
Well, no, because we thought when we started this journey, friends of the pod, we thought, of course, by the time we get to the fifth book, the next one's going to be out. We're going to really go slow. We're going to do like one a year, maybe. Well, folks, we're here.
We're here.
It's time for the last in the Game of Thrones and the Song of Ice and Fire series. And we'll see how it is. You know?
That's right.
Luke, we're doing quarters for this bad boy.
Yeah. Long bucks, so quarters.
So we will be back next week. Seeing what George is up to, we'll bring the hot takes.
And be the dumb nerds.